Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, a web-building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. On today's menu is magical resources, those elements of a world that drive industry, warfare. Not necessarily habitual use, but this is more something that societies desperately crave. I'm thinking things like vibranium from the Marvel Universe, right? Everyone wants it in the world. Most valuable resources, quote Ultron, the most versatile substance in the world, and they formed it into a frisbee.
I didn't know they formed it into a frisbee, but...
Well, he was talking about Captain America's shield.
Gotcha. But yeah, something that is a resource that provides a unique...
Comparative advantage?
Well, as I say, it provides a unique benefit, and it's oftentimes a metal. It is, The Witcher also has like the metal that is anti-magic when they put it on a magic user.
Yeah. Cortosis in the Star Wars world.
I don't know what that is.
It's, it was in the Legends, like the pre-Disney world, and they brought it officially with the Acolyte into the post-Disney world, The Disney world, I guess. It is a metal that disrupts lightsabers.
Oh.
So ancient Sith would make armor out of it. And so when Jedi would hit them with the lightsabers, it would short out the lightsaber. They could turn it back on later.
Yeah.
But it would absolutely fuck them up. There's an incredible fight scene in The Acolyte where the Sith Lord is wearing Cortosis, and you see just how devastating it is.
Okay.
It's really cool.
Okay. There you go. Spice from Dune is a huge magic resource.
Kwisatz Haderach, give the dog a bone.
And I mean, it's also a drug, but it is a resource that like the entire empire is functioning off of. Yeah. And all of the political turmoil of the entire universe of Dune is centered around collecting spice. It is like, I think, the quintessential magic resource. You could even argue something like the rings in Lord of the Rings are a magic resource. Like, in a like you could make your way there. I'm not going to argue it, but like it's when there's many.
Yeah.
And I mean, in Lord of the Rings, Mithril is probably a better example as an actual magical resource that people are,
and
that is, you know, highly sought after and very rare.
Yeah.
And I mean, we see that throughout the Tolkien verse.
Throughout I feel like every fantasy world has its own Mithril analog. Marvel has it with vibranium and also with adamantium.
There you go. It's often the hard metal, the metal that's unbreakable, which is
the true metal, I think, is the like technically, like there's like a literary term for it, and it's called like the true metal.
Yeah, and I think it's probably safe to say neither of us are going to do that here because that is done. So no. we're gonna try to push,
we're doing something different.
We're gonna push the boundaries of what a magical resource could be and why it could be a source of conflict in a world.
Ooh, kyber crystals, like that the Jedi and the Sith need to use. That is one change that I actually do like that the Disney world has done to the lore of Star Wars, where lightsabers can only be made out of a very specific crystal, the kyber crystals. And part of the ritual is the Jedi bonding with their crystal, and then the Sith having red lightsabers because they forcibly break that bond and bleed the crystal. That's why it turns red.
That's cool.
And I like that. I think that's very cool. So, yeah, great example.
There you go.
High five to me.
All right, Ethan. Well, then tell me, what is your menu description for your noodles?
My menu description, bring out your dead.
Okay.
What about yours? What is your... describe your dish for me. I said that very seductively. Describe your dish for me, Kyle.
Simplified supply chain.
Fucking econ nerd.
I know. It's not a great descriptor for what it is, but I didn't want to give it away.
Please be our appetizer course. Be our primi piatti.
It is actually quite appropriate that's what you said to start this up. So every army that is on the move in the history of the world needs a couple primary things to keep itself moving and to keep itself fighting. You need food and water.
Mm.
You need the basic necessities of life.
Yeah.
You also need stuff like weapons and all that, but we're putting that off to the side because
food
you can
for make, horses.
Yeah, you need you just need the basics. And I was thinking about a resource. I'm honing on this.
Yeah, I love that. Keep it going.
What if you have a resource that is like, take lambus bread.
Yeah.
But
brain was going there.
Yeah, lambus bread is a great idea.
Yeah.
But take it and put it on in a different dish, and mix it up. So we have a a substance that you can consume that will provide you with all the nutrients you need to go. Mm. It will give you caffeine, so it'll give you a boost. Mm. It will provide you with, like, you know, a donkey level of hydration. Like, you are good to go for the day. Not donkey, camel. A camel level of hydration.
Fuck. What?
You'll be no. That was weird. You'll be hydrated like a camel.
You'll be hydrated like a fucking donkey. Donkey.
Donkey.
Donkey.
This is a substance that most of the world doesn't know. All of the world, pretty much nobody knows where the substance is coming from.
Interesting.
It is feeding the army of the primary empire of this world.
Sure. Probably how that became the primary empire, too.
Let's say the only empire.
Yeah, I would imagine.
It is just referred to as the empire.
If you have access to a resource like that,
you just,
that would facilitate imperial activity.
Yeah. And they keep it specifically for their army, for their military. And I was thinking of a couple reasons. I was thinking of a couple sources of this substance. Hmm. And first one up was, what if it's a mineral that you have to crush up and then you consume it and it's like you're getting part of the earth? And I was like, yeah, you could do that, I guess. And then I thought, no. The reason why it's secret is because they don't want the people who consume it to know what they're consuming, because they don't want them to refuse it.
Soylent Green is people?
No.
Oh.
It's shit. it's the shit of, could be a dragon.
Yeah, I like it being dragon shit. That's great.
It could be human shit that's prepared in some specific way.
Yeah.
It could be some small little magical creature. It doesn't quite matter to me. We can get at it later, I guess.
Yeah.
But the point is that the Empire is keeping it under wraps because if they are fearful that their soldiers will refuse to consume it because they don't want to eat shit. And if they don't eat the shit, they don't have any food or water, and then their fighting skill or their fighting ability just plummets. So they say, this is whatever it is. They keep it nebulous. They say this is the proprietary, like, this is the special substance that we keep you guys running on.
Everything comes down to poo. Biologically speaking, it's not crazy.
No.
Stool is concentrated remains of whatever you've eaten already, right?
Like, if you're a dragon.
And if you're a dragon, who the hell knows, like, what your body actually needs? It could be that you just need bone marrow to live on. I'm ad-libbing here. I'm making this up. So the concentrated remains of proteins, water, amino acids, vitamins, minerals that they shit out, that they excrete, would be wildly beneficial.
And really dense.
And hyper-concentrated for a human. It could have everything that the human needs, and maybe that's why, in addition to this resource making them very efficient soldiers, it is a great explanation for a symbiotic relationships with the dragons.
Yes. You could do symbiotic, or you can do not so symbiotic, and you could say that they're this empire, like, take the, you know, Song of Ice and Fire, the Targaryens, you know, they have a dragon pits full, you know, that are like feedlots where they are just shoving all these cattle and sheep into these dragons and force feeding them and just making them so fat they're unable to, like, the dragon from the D&D movie.
Honor Among Thieves, yeah.
You know,
it's Fembershot? Timbershot.
I don't know. Fucking cares. It can't fly. It can't do anything. It's just shitting constantly. But that shit is like, each turd is 50 cows.
Right.
So you only have to cut off like a little bit of it. And then
you
cook it in a fire. You do something.
You process it in some way.
That it does not look to be shit. It could just become a powder, or it can become a solid little nugget.
Right.
That is, you know.
It's not already a solid little nugget.
No, it's liquid. Let's be real. It's a dragon that's super fat and sitting still.
And also, I imagine fire breather, hyper caustic environment internally probably just reduces everything to liquid.
I don't know.
I'm making it up.
Or the opposite, that it would get rid of all the liquid by cooking it off, and then it just is creating a very rock solid substance.
Sure, could do that too.
Yes. Sorry for this is a trigger warning for some shit.
We got really into. I hope you're not eating right now.
If you are eating and listening to this podcast, one, you're a trooper, and two, I'm sorry. So back to the thing. Regardless of the mechanics of the shit, it doesn't matter. This is when mechanics are not in our favor. It is fueling them on such a minimum amount of this substance, and that is kind of the simplistic idea. It doesn't have a whole lot more to it, I don't think.
It could even be just these are mushrooms that grow in fertilizer that's fed by dragon shit.
Yeah, this grows in dragon shit. This is the fungus on dragon's toes.
Yeah.
It can be something disgusting, but the point is that whatever it is by its nature not appealing to eat. Agreed. And thus they're hiding its source from the world because they don't want their soldiers to know. Now you could take it and say, well, why don't they feed more people with this? Why is it only the army? And that can create an interesting conflict of the army getting maybe a little bit weary and frustrated with what they're doing. And they say, well, why don't we are conquering these people and these people are hungry. Let's give them some of this. Let's give them some of our fuel and maybe they'll be okay. And they do. And then you create a weird dynamic of somewhat of this anger at the empire that people now know what's being withheld from them. They know the empire has this substance that can feed everybody if they have it. And then you create a bit of a rebellion and an uprising over the hidden food supply. And then the empire is being forced to reveal more and more information about this thing that they were trying to keep under wraps.
I mean, it is still, at the end of the day, a limited... There are still constraints on this resource.
People don't know that, though.
True.
I mean, you could just say that.
Sure.
But then the people might not believe you.
Right.
Because
you've been lying all this whole time.
Well, and they can see how big the army is and how much movement they've made. And they can say, well, you're giving this to the army and whatever. You know, how is this happening? Maybe some shipments of it are ambushed and stolen. And then there's some neighboring place is, you know, getting fed on it. I don't know.
You mean a shipment?
A shipment, yes. A shipment.
Self five. I like dragon shit senzu beans, man. I think it's a great... It solves a logistical challenge. It does definitely have a magical component to it. You can easily build up stories about supply chain resource constraints around it. It ticks all of those boxes. And I like that it's sourced in real... Like, when we're talking even about modern food chains and supply chains... People don't want to know.
Yeah.
They don't.
No.
Most of what we eat, like if we knew the type of, pun intended, shit that most of the crap we put in our body goes through, we would be horrified.
Yes.
And so this is no different. And so it's a great way to tell a story.
Yeah. About that. It's great. Great analog to the real world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's that.
You piece of shit.
All right. Moving on to... moving on to your noodles, hopefully more delectable.
And secondi piatti, primi piatti,
secondi
piatti. It is piatti, right?
Yeah.
You lived in Italy. Bring out your dad. Kyle, do you know what vivianite is?
No.
Vivianite is a naturally occurring crystal that grows on the inside shells of dead mollusks and out of bodies and on the and inside what are they called, coffins. It is a crystal that grows from the dead.
That's pretty metal
crystal.
Huh.
It is this beautiful deep shade of green. It's like like probably my favorite shade of green, which is a
like
weird
darker than a jade.
Yeah, it's also got a little bit of blue in it. Like it's super pretty. Here, this is what it looks like.
Oh, that's cool.
Which none of you guys can see, but I did just hand Kyle my phone. Anyway, the point is, I started thinking this is a crystal that grows from death, right? And very much related to your topic, life feeds on death. Let us never forget that. Life feeds on death. And
the circle of life.
I started thinking about, this is a prime example of if life was if a life and a person's soul and essence was concentrated into that, into a crystal that grew out of its dead body, if the right people knew how to use it, this could be a really valuable magical resource. So I started thinking, you have a world, you have a society that starts mining this Vivianite like crystal. They would be obsessed with death, so much so even that they might build a massive mausoleum as a megastructure.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to megastructures.
Shout out to megastructures. So I think, what did we call? We called that the House of Nyx, right?
Yes.
So I thought about calling this Nyxite. I've decided since to call this material Nock instead, like Nox, which is the other name for Nyx, the god of night. So we're going to call it Nock instead. And okay. Nock was discovered by the House of Nyx early in its stage, before it was an empire, when, as part of their religious burials, there's something about their religious burial practices. It's either the chemicals that they use to embalm the bodies, or incense that they use as part of their, I don't know what it is yet. That's going to be up to the author. But as part of these rituals, they note that, you know, there were crystals growing all over their dead bodies. And I imagine that two people, as often happened during funerals, family tensions run high. They started a fight. A crystal was struck by a hit or a weapon or some bit of kinetic energy, and it caused a massive explosion because all of the energy of the crystal was suddenly released. And so people suddenly started realizing, oh shit, we can use this, which kicked off a bit of an industrial revolution and started people in the House of Nyx to start trying to figure out and isolate what it was about their burial practice that led to Nock growing out of these dead bodies, because this now became the source of their military might.
Because they're able to use this resource as like a magic thing to like make them more powerful.
They started out by fueling weapons with it, making bombs out of it. I imagine that over time, maybe some of their priests started realizing that it wasn't just an explosive, but you could also use it as a magical focus, as a source of magic, because the entirety of a person's life force was concentrated into that crystal. And so it just further kickstarted this whole industrial revolution of them figuring out how to use it, but they needed increasing numbers of dead bodies to feed the machine. That is why they started building the massive mausoleum and gathering the dead of all of the soldiers that they killed and actually uprooting the dead I forget what the word is. I'm going to say disembalming. It's not what I mean, but unearthing the dead of all of the people that they conquer in order to bring them back to the mausoleum and continue to fulfill the needs of the empire's wizards and armies. So this is Nock.
Yeah. So you create a war machine, essentially.
Fueled by death.
And in pursuit of death.
And this is the source of their, not only their entire military's might, but it is also the source of their entire military's weakness. Because they are not only dependent on it, but their society is so paralyzed because they are, as soon as the bring out your dead is people coming around, inspectors coming to look for dead bodies. The minute that you are ill, you're like, you have to hide. You can never show physical weakness in this society, because as soon as someone senses that you might be off, they might kill you and turn you in for a bounty and turn in your body.
Or they're going to always prevent you from being healed because they say, well,
exactly.
You know, from my recollection, the House of Nyx was not like they were very much a god of death for good situation. They were doing it in not an evil practice, but in this version, they have become corrupted and have turned their otherwise very what they viewed as altruistic practice into mm-hmm. a clearly very selfish practice, and they've lost any of that altruism along the way.
Some have. I think for a lot of the people working in the mausoleum, they have been duped by their own leaders into believing this is still altruistic.
Mm.
So for me, the inside of the mausoleum, even if it is a very industrial factory looking vibe to it, mm-hmm. the people tending the bodies are still dressed in priestly garments. That's very important to me, actually, because yeah. I think that that number one, I like that dichotomy of the
fun vibe too.
Of the industrial place being run by people in priestly raiments. I think that's just fun.
Yeah.
But I think that's also just really important because it makes, in empires like this, their own subjects are often just as much victims as the people they are.
They're after.
Yeah, they're after. They might be protected and, you know, as long as they still do. But it's there is still something. They are still manipulated in the same way.
Yeah.
I also think that you've got these priestly people. I think that the people going out there, this was just a small bit of world building I had that I was really excited about that I have to get out. I think the mausoleum is protected by a very special group of paladins who are devoted to this cause that are called the Plutonian Knights. And they are named after the raven from Edgar Allan Poe, you know, from Knights Plutonian Shore.
Okay.
And so they're the Plutonian Knights.
Okay. I think it's great. I think it's, you know, pretty well cooked as you described it.
Like I said, as soon as I came up with Vivian, I've been working on this for a while.
Yeah. I think going back to the substance itself is containing the soul of the person, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that speaks to me as a great way to add in a flavor of this being like, oh, much more macabre. Like it's okay, macabre, but you make mm-hmm. it more macabre. You lean into the Poe of it all. It is this, each of these people who are using the knock.
Who's there?
Each people using the knock, you can feel the soul of the person who was there. You can feel like the torture of their soul being ripped apart. You can feel that friction because that's what's happened to them, and you have to feel the pain, which you become inured to it in a way, which makes you more sociopathic and more...
Absolutely. I had not considered that. You're completely right.
And a little bit more stuck into this process because you are... Like some people might back off and say, I'm not going to use it, but the people who do use it are the people who are predisposed to being sociopathic or psychopathic.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also could be people who are who just like, you know, like a drug, they just power through and they become addicted and they mm-hmm. and they lose their sense of themselves because they're being like these memories are flushing through them of the tortured souls that have, you know, the process of creating the knock, you know, like taking it from what it was, you know, into a thing that you could actually channel
mm-hmm.
has, you know, that was a painful process for their soul. So then you relive that as well as whatever they endured in life. And then on top of that, because you get the benefit.
Right.
So then put like any industrial process, you got to have a byproduct.
Right.
The byproduct is
A waste product somewhere.
And that's never positive.
No.
There's never any good out of a byproduct.
No.
Not really. Not in any industrial sense.
Yeah.
So when they burn it off, you have like this
as part of like the processing.
Yes.
Of it?
Okay. Yeah. Like whatever they're processing to create something that they can channel with, or even just when you use it, it kind of leaves behind the remnants of it. And it is this somewhat of a miasma of all of the broken souls with none of, none of the power and all of the sad.
Yeah.
So it is just like that washing over its people.
That like creepy green smoke that always is necromancer green. And
exactly.
You know that color.
The necromancer green that is, very synonymous with necromancers, but then put it on like an industrial level and just it is this small cloud, I guess, over the, you know, it just kind of wafts over the cities of the House of Nyx,
yeah,
or whatever, that they they get to, you know, like, you are depressing your people.
Yeah.
Fundamentally. Mm-hmm. So they're already struggling with the situation that they're in, and now you have chemically fucked with their psyche and brought in everybody's level way down.
Absolutely love it. To call it like the what's a great word for it? Like, what could we call that? The last breath, or like the dead's breath, or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But they don't even know what it's called.
No. This is just how they refer to it internally.
Well, they don't know it's a thing.
No, I mean, like the higher ups who do know what it is.
Oh, the higher ups do know this is a thing.
Oh, I think they absolutely know.
Oh, yeah. Much like, you know, tobacco companies didn't know that it killed, and you know, oil companies had no idea that it was bad for the climate.
No, they
always know.
Somebody always knows.
God. Ethan's face was very strange when I did that.
God. Just such a religious parrot. God. God.
A religious parrot. I love it.
oh, God. Continue.
So then bringing it back to the next people.
To the people farming dead bodies.
Yeah. But like, this is going to be a vicious cycle.
Yeah.
They're going to kill everybody.
Yeah.
And they're going to start killing themselves. And they're going to.
It's a police state.
But they're going to undo their gains.
Eventually.
Yeah.
Not even, I mean, and I don't envision this as one of those empires that, you know, lives for thousands of years. Like, we're talking.
It's a 100-year empire.
100 max, you know, 5. Like, depending on the type of story you want to tell, I want this to be a very, very, very high, but very narrow spike.
I think it works well as like a Third Reich. It's a quick ascend, huge impact on the world, clear evil empire.
Right.
Everybody's like, fuck, we got to deal with that problem.
Right.
And then it dissipates.
The impacts of which will never be forgotten by history.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like, there's several analogs that are similar to that, but that one's like a very obvious one and very recent for all of us and universal. So like, yeah, taking it and making that sort of thing, but you could also have it be where nobody attacks it. No one deals with the threat. It deals with itself because it cannibalizes itself through its pursuit of more dead, and then people running away, people figuring out ways to just counteract the effects while not actually fighting them, but just like, we treated our dead with like, we embalmed them or something, so you can't use them.
We cremated so we also from another one of our episode from the same Megastructures episode, we were talking about the people of Arbolus, right?
Who bury their dead in trees or something?
Cremate them and use their ashes to fertilize trees. And so what if they didn't do that originally, but that was a response?
Yeah. So then the whole world is,
they're changing their burial rituals left, right, and center.
And they're just incinerating bodies during war. Their soldiers will just self-immolate before they die.
Oh, I love that.
So that they can prevent, so like, you can't use my body. Ooh, because I it becomes that. Like a, this is now like a righteous quest prevent them from doing this. So they're just like, we will immolate and we will set fire to every one of your bodies so that you also don't get to.
And the psychology of that, I'm specifically thinking right now about the Arbolian, like the tree people, like fire is the natural enemy of the, right? Like, so for them to have to adopt it to save, like, that is so psychologically fucked for them.
Yeah.
I'm just a little bit awash of that. That's such a great idea.
This entire idea is so awash with people having their psychology fucked with.
Oh, my God.
You know, such is war.
Such is war, but that's so, oh, I love that. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. Like, that was, ugh. Well done. Well done, sir. Absolute love that.
I don't know if there's anything more to do on that one.
No, it's I think it hits at everything that like a magical, like we've kind of discussed everything. The only, there is one last idea, and it's, again, it's set dressing. It's, again, the knock is the knock crystal is the concentration of a person's life force and energy. So I had this idea that a the more powerful the magic user, basically, or the more powerful the individual,
then the
more powerful the knock that grows out of them.
Yeah.
So I imagine that there, somewhere in this empire, there is an ancient magic user. I don't know. I don't care if they're a cleric or whatever. I don't. Everyone is waiting for them to die.
Yeah. Well, I think this...
Because they're like, that will be the thing. That crystal that grows from them will be... It will be the nuclear... It will be the Oppenheimer effect. Like, it is the same thing.
But then you are creating even more fuel for the cycle to speed up and for them to cannibalize faster. Because if people are... If people are incentivized to start killing their rivals, their competitors, these people who are also trying to rise through the ranks, and if you kill them, you can take their power, you are on a slippery slope to done.
Because you're also going to start putting a cap on power. Because
you would try to.
Well, no, because people are going to start killing people sooner before they can develop their power.
It will be an unofficial cap. It'll be a self-regulated cap because nobody wants to let anybody become.
It might peak early, but that's like, oh, but then everyone started killing each other trying to get to the knock, and so that like reduced the potency of the knock crystal.
To be a very millennial white man for a second, it's very much like the late Roman Republic.
Yes, it is.
Because
absolutely,
no one man is allowed to have that much power. If you gather too much power, your rivals will take you down because you are now a threat to their power and to the Republic, and which is the thing that keeps all of their power available.
So imagine
it's any oligarchy.
So imagine if you were not just a threat, but also a potential resource.
Yeah,
for them.
Yeah,
like
if you kill Caesar, you also get Caesar's power. Then everyone says, "Well, shit." I don't actually need any of the co-conspirators. I'll just do it myself.
Right.
I'll take all the power.
Right.
But then it becomes, you become a bigger threat.
That's right.
So then how do you, and how do you divide that? If you can, I'll have an alliance with someone, or does everybody have the arrogance to say, well, I can do it.
Yeah.
I'll be the one that breaks the cycle by getting so much power, no one can touch me.
Yeah.
And it's like, everybody says that until it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Yeah,
I think it's great.
I love it. I love it. I'm so that fucking the tree people self-immolating. God, fucking love it.
All right, well, let's move on to some frozen lasagna.
Ooh, press that microwave button, Kyle.
Ding. This one is also it feels like logistics is the name of the game for me today.
Mm.
Slime from some sort of creature, or like an ooze, or like a saliva that is quick hardening caulk, and so you basically can just. But it's like quick hardening concrete.
Yeah.
So if you take the slime, and there's a small window where you can turn it into something like concrete. So then they just have a bunch of these things, lined up, and they're just like squeezing them out, trying to
create. What are you squeezing out of the quick hardening caulk, Kyle? What are you squeezing out of there, my man?
Slime.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. You know what I'm trying to say. It's not that. Get your mind out of the fucking gutter.
Bullshit.
Get your mind out of the gutter that I'm built with the slime. That's my lasagna. I resign. You fucking dirty pervert. All right.
I didn't do this.
No, I didn't. I didn't make that connection. You did.
Oh, right. God. That was funny.
You go. Ding.
Ding. So this is there is a creature out in the world who is not actually, it's sort of a jellyfish-like thing. But the trick of them is that their body is made from a semi-solid, viscous, jelly-like liquid. And over time, people have figured out that if you can, through electricity or through magic, change the shape of that liquid, that's how the creature survives and defends itself and protects itself. But so they have now started using that to make basically a universal multi-tool or multi-weapon, because it can be forged immediately and reshaped to be a sword, a shield, a mace, a screwdriver, a whatever. All just responding to electrical current or responses.
Cool.
Or magical triggers of some sort.
All right. Well, what stuck for you?
I think you already know the answer to that one.
Self-immolating tree people?
It's so messed up.
Yeah.
And it's completely yes, for survival, we will adopt our, like, this thing that is a symbol of death for us. We will begin to use that for our advantage, like, consequences be damned, because we need to survive. Like, it's, I love it.
Yeah.
I just completely stuck on that. So perverse. So perverse. I love it.
Okay.
What stuck for you?
I don't know. I feel like probably... I think all of the knock idea is really good. I think that's probably what stuck. I think I don't have quite the level of love of the self-immolation that you do. I think it's good, but I don't think it's that good.
I just think it's just really twisted.
Yeah. I really love the idea of the substance's relationship to the soul and the way that it interacts with people who are using it versus people who are, like, getting the byproduct. I think that's really good, and I think that's really interesting, and I think it plays on the core theme of this, like, especially when you talked about, like, oh, the higher ups definitely know about the byproduct,
yeah,
and, like, the fact that it is literally soul based, that it's, you know, the soullessness of, like, this whole thing is just such a, like, deeply themed metaphor.
Yeah,
and that works really well.
Yeah,
and I think it's, like, there's the point where you're like, oh, it's too obvious a metaphor. And there's the point where it's like, it's so evilly on, like, not even on the, it's not on the nose, but it's like, it's so evilly clearly the metaphor.
Yeah.
That it works better.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you do another Tolkien style orc thing about, like, industrialization is bad. Yeah, it's kind of like, it's done. It's not, but this being like, creating this, like, this vicious cycle-ness of it all, the oligarchy lurking beneath the surface. I think bringing in that, like, that end of Rome stuff is, like, I think that works really well, not just because...
The short-sightedness of it, the focus on immediate gains over long-term.
And the fact that you're creating this power struggle where they're all going to kill each other, and, like, the fact that it is, like, there is that lack of soul for everybody, and it's, like, the whole thing just works on theme really well. And theme in world building is oftentimes the thing that we overlook, because it's like, what's cool?
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the point. You figure the theme. If you're writing a story, you have to come up with themes in the story. The world building is usually just a mechanism to create a world.
Right.
And the theme comes later in the story. But when the world has a theme, that's really fun. Yeah. And that makes everything easier to do. And your world building should maybe work towards that theme. But here it's just like, well, the theme and the world and the story are all together.
It's all one.
They're all, and I can't cross three fingers very well. It doesn't look as good, but they're all intertwined, which is really fun.
Yeah.
Thanks, love it. Man.
Yeah. No, it was amazing. And also, I do find it interesting, and something that I will think of is that both of us came up with ideas that really zone in not on just the theme of, you know, like, but the theme on the core theme that life feeds on death. Like,
yeah,
life is gross.
Yeah. Well, and
right. Like, wait, and we that's both something that's overlooked a lot, I think. Right. Like,
well, and we both got in on the theme of imperialism. What is the magical resource, and why is it being used? Oh, for a military. Military science is the thing that pushes resources forward throughout human history. And I part of me is kind of disappointed we didn't come up with anything that wasn't about military, but it also just makes sense, because it's usually the first stop for using a resource, especially in these types of stories. In spec fic, it's not going to be like, it's not usually like, oh, modern medicine type stuff where it's like, oh, we're in a lab, we developed the thing with the tiny little thing, and we don't think about those because it's not bombastic for world building.
Right. Well, it's either, even they're doing it largely for profit in many cases. So without getting into it, is anything ever truly altruistic?
Wow. Okay. Well, that's what stuck for us.
Let us know what stuck for you.
Emails in the show notes. Thanks for listening.
But is it altruistic?
Goodbye.